Richard Russo has drawn on his experiences growing up in a hardscrabble, depressed mill town in upstate New York for his fiction, but until recently he had shied away from writing a memoir. That changed last fall with the publication of Elsewhere, Mr. Russo's first volume of nonfiction, in which he examined his relationships both with his hometown, Gloversville, and with Jean Russo, his emotionally needy single mother. Vintage has just reissued the book in paperback, and I'm pleased that it brings Richard Russo back to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
Your mother died in 2007. Had you been thinking about her life and your relationship ever since?
Yeah, pretty much nonstop. And that's the reason that I interrupted a novel that I was working on, a novel I've since gone back to. But it seemed to me that there must be unfinished business. I was dreaming about her a lot, and daydreaming about her life as well.
Well, when you're in the middle of the relationship, you don't have time to really reflect. But you've had time to reflect since. Did this book help you to better understand the dynamics of this very complicated relationship?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I found myself writing this memoir for the same reason that I write my novels, which was not to tell people what I think and feel, but to discover what I think and feel. And I discovered when I sat down to write this book and started to tell my mother's story that there were just things I didn't understand. And strangely enough, I'd been telling stories about her, about our early life together in this modest house on Hellwig Street in Gloversville, New York. And yet, stories that I told people just, you know, kind of, you know, the way we tell stories verbally kind of made sense. But when I sat down to write them, there were gaps in the narrative and gaps in motivation that I didn't really understand at all. And only when I started trying to fill in those gaps of motivation did the story begin to really come together for me.
Well, was it a painful book to write?
Excruciating.
Readers love to ask novelists where they get their ideas. Edward Albee hates that question, and he snarls, "Schenectady." So I was kind of amused when I realized that you'd grown up right near Schenectady.
What I want to know is what he's doing up there getting his ideas from someplace so close to my hometown.
He's just being sarcastic. But in your case, it's reality. You've written 9 or 10 novels, almost as many screenplays, a collection of short stories. But until now, you've avoided memoir. Could a clever reader have come up with a memoir by reading your fiction very closely?
Well, one or two reviewers of this book have remarked that it does feel to them kind of like a skeleton key, in a way, to my novels. To read the Gloversville sections of Elsewhere is almost to be given a tour by my fictional towns by Lucy Lynch and Miles Roby and some of my other important characters in those novels.
Well, you didn't do the book tour when the hardcover edition was released because you didn't want to talk about the memoir? Because this was an uncomfortable story to talk about?
It was an uncomfortable story. A very good friend of mine, Andre Debuse, III, had just published a year earlier, and we'd been talking about memoir writing because he's a fiction writer as well. And he published this wonderful memoir called Townie, in which he had a vivid, wonderful, warm, loving portrait of his father, Andre Debuse II, also a wonderful writer.
Both of whom have been guests on the show.
Yes, yes. And Andre went on the road, he was mortified that people came up and told him, you know, just how their opinion of his father, what a horrible man he was, and how he would never be able to read his father again. And Andre was just mortified by that because he thought, and it was an absolutely loving portrait of his father. But when he told me those stories, I thought to myself, I just don't know if I can go on the road with this particular book and either have, you know, lots of people say, I had a worse mother than you, you know, because I happened to love my mother very much.
You describe her as a lively, fun-loving, and fashionable woman.
Mm-hmm.
The parents split up when you were young. She raised you in an apartment on the top floor of the house where she'd grown up in Gloversville. Did your grandparents still live there at the time?
Yeah, they sure did. And they had they played a very large role in my upbringing, because my mother, boy, she had it. She didn't have it easy for a lot of years. You know, she would get up very early in the morning and drive that hour's drive from Gloversville to Schenectady. And she would work her eight and a half hour day, drive back home again, or ride back home with the people she went to Schenectady with, and then be faced with, you know, cooking her own dinner and making sure that I had clean clothes and everything for the next day. It was that was a very long day for her.
On the other hand, it sounds like being independent was extremely important to her, and that's why, despite always having money problems, she felt it was important to pay rent to your grandparents.
Right, right. Independence.
That you had to borrow money.
That you
had
to get through the rest of the month. And then sometimes you'd have to borrow money in order to pay the rent. Yeah. Yeah, independence was very much the issue for my mother. She wanted to be independent, but when she was independent, she was constantly coming up short in money and in other things, and wherewithal, and all kinds of wherewithal. And it was very much her love affair, her need, her desperate need for independence was very closely tied to Gloversville, the town that she grew up in and the town that I grew up in. Oh,
but that's a reason she decided to work in Schenectady rather than working in town.
Absolutely, yeah.
You describe her as an avid reader who kept a large and cohesive book collection in her apartment. Was she especially pleased when you decided to become a writer?
Oh, well, that's a difficult question. Nobody is more responsible for making me a writer than my mother, because she first made me an avid reader. But when it came right down to it, I was just finishing up my PhD in American literature, and the writing bug had got me. And when I told her that I was going to be a writer, she was terrified and furious. She thought that I was giving up my life, my secure life as a professor, and that I was being selfish. And there were certain reasons to think that too. I was giving I was giving up something secure for something that was, to her mind, a dream. And she knew from personal experience how deadly sometimes dreams can be.
Well, she also prided herself on getting you out of Gloversville, and yet here you are setting all your novels in a town that looks very much like Gloversville.
Yeah, I think as my career progressed, she was never able to resolve the paradox any more than I have been able to resolve the paradox of the fact that she had hoped I would get away clean, you know, that I would get away from Gloversville clean and feel no need, the terrible need that she always felt to go back. And the fact that I set all my novels in a fictional form of Gloversville, to her mind, meant that I had not gotten away clean. She felt bad about that.
Well, but she had a hard time getting away, literally, because she didn't drive.
Yeah.
I would assume everybody grows up in a town like Gloversville drives.
The $600, $800 car that I bought to go to Arizona in was the first car that was owned on my maternal grandfather's side of the family. He didn't drive. My grandfather didn't drive. My grandmother didn't drive. My mother didn't drive. And her sister, my Aunt Phyllis, didn't drive. And that seems astonishing now, doesn't it?
Well, it also seems astonishing that 90% of the country's dress gloves were made in this town at one point.
Yeah.
Richard Russo has always been on our show before to discuss his wonderful novels. This time he's returned to discuss something even more personal, a memoir of his growing up and his mother. It's called Elsewhere, and it's now available in paperback from Vintage. It was a bestseller when it was released in hardcover. And you mentioned you decided to attend college in Arizona rather than one of the state schools. New York has some pretty good ones, because you realized that your tuition would be cheaper there?
Well, that was one of the reasons. Yes, the University of Arizona at the time, even with out-of-state tuition, and I figured that I could probably somehow or other get in-state tuition after the first year because my mother was moving out there and establishing residency. But she discovered that even with out-of-state tuition, that it was pretty much a push, or maybe a little bit cheaper to go to the University of Arizona than it would have been to go to the State University of New York at Stony Brook or Albany, even with my substantial scholarship.
Well, were you surprised when she decided to go with you? And then you had to find her an apartment before you even established yourself in the dorm.
Leonard, imagine my surprise.
And your relationship remained close. Every time you moved, she moved. You had to take her to the grocery store, get her hair done every week, even after you were married and had a couple of kids. I came away from reading this book suspecting that your wife must be one of the most even-tempered and generous women on earth.
Yes.
Did she ever run out of patience on this?
Forbearance was her middle name for a lot of years, for the better part of 40 years. Yeah.
Well, the mystery seems to be solved to some degree when you realize that your mother probably had OCD.
Yeah.
So how did that...
Obsessive compulsive disorder cuts a wide swath through the family for me on both my father and my mother's side.
And you think you even have a few signs of it yourself?
Yeah.
You have a kid who has OCD?
Yes. I finally came to the discovery as a result of my daughter, Kate, who self-diagnosed. And, of course, she had been observing my grandmother during the entire time that she was growing up. She and her sister, Emily, were growing up. And I'm not telling tales out of school here. Kate was one of the early readers of this book, and she felt that it was very important not only to tell my mother's story, but also to have people understand how I came to the knowledge that my mother was obsessive compulsive. And my daughter Kate actually diagnosed herself and went to a couple of people, had the diagnosis confirmed. And it was then that I started reading books about OCD. And it was astonishing to me, just absolutely astonishing, that every page of these books was about my mother.
But it also explained things about yourself, like how you'd been sidetracked a couple of times with obsessions you couldn't control, like an addiction to a specific pinball machine.
Yes. At the University of Arizona, one of the things that I discovered my freshman year there was this the pinball room in general, and this one particular machine. And God, for months, I spent meal money on it. Everything went into it, and I learned at that point that I was going to have to watch myself in terms of obsessions and addictions, because really, if you can't break yourself of pinball, you should really stay away from things like drugs. Mm-hmm. So it did. My beginning understandings of how I throw myself into things, and of course, writing has been that way too. Writing is, I like to think, my final foray into the world of obsession and addiction.
Could you have written this book if your mother was still alive?
No, definitely not. No, it would have hurt her. And it was a book that even when I was writing it, I wasn't sure I was going to publish. I knew I had to write it, but I wasn't sure I was going to publish it. And it was my daughters again, and my wife who felt that maybe this book would do some other people some good.
Well, since it's received such wonderful response after it was released in hardcover last fall, Michael Schaub, a reviewer for NPR's All Things Considered, called it a tragedy as unrelentingly sad as it is beautiful. He also said it was one of the most honest, moving American memoirs in years. The book got great reviews. Are you tempted at all to do another memoir?
No. This was my one and only, I think.
Well, fiction can function as memoir anyway, can't it?
Well, it's been functioning as memoir and therapy for me for many, many years now. And I discovered I'm back writing the book that I was writing before this and having a wonderful time inventing things again.
Also set in a version of Gloversville?
Yes. It's a sequel, actually, to my earlier novel, Nobody's Fool. It's called Everybody's Fool, and it's back in upstate New York.
Richard Russo will be giving a talk and signing books tonight at 7 o'clock at the Barnes & Noble store at Union Square. The book we've been discussing elsewhere is now available in paperback from Vintage. thank you so much for being with us again.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.